Good morning. It is a blessing to be with the group here at 78th and University. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to you this morning. I appreciate the elders giving me that invitation. If you remember me, then that tells me that you must be an old timer. And if you don't remember me, then that's probably because I hadn't been around in about 20 years. I think that was when I graduated from Tech. I'm here this morning with my two boys, Zach and Zane, and we're here for the weekend, and we bore the weather, the coldness, went to the game last night and had a good time. Tomorrow, Zach has his campus tour, and hopefully he'll be able to come out here to Tech and be here in the fall of next year. We're from the Dallas area, and again, it is a blessing for us to be here and be with you this morning. I'd like to talk for a little while about three things, about fathers and mothers and children, and our responsibility to the church. The way I'll introduce this is by asking everyone to take their shoes off. No, just kidding. Keep your shoes on. Please keep your shoes on. But what's one of the things that we do when we get home? After you spend a day of running errands or maybe working all day, keeping your appointments, chasing kids, what's the first thing you do? But even before you check the answer machine, you take your shoes off, don't you? Perhaps you just want to save the carpet. Perhaps you're on your way to putting on your running shoes, your workout shoes, maybe your slippers. You trade them for those work shoes or the high heels that you've been wearing all day. Perhaps you just like feeling the padding of the carpet. Taking off your shoes is a very normal thing. It's a very homey thing. It's a thing to do in a place where you feel safe and you feel accepted. So what does taking off your shoes have to do with the morning's lesson? It's interesting. It might have more to do with it than you might think. You remember the story of Moses at the burning bush? He was, first of all, you remember him as a baby. And back then, they were killing all the baby boys. So mom puts him in a little basket and sends him down the river. And he gets saved and he's raised up in Pharaoh's house. When he's around 40 years old, he's got to leave Egypt. He had killed a man and he left Egypt, and he had found out about him being a Hebrew anyway, and he left. And he was up there in the mountains and he was tending to his father-in-law's sheep. And he looks out and he sees this bush and it's on fire. But it's not burning up. But it's on fire. And in Exodus 3, God speaks to him. He says, "Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." Now, God wasn't necessarily telling Moses to take your shoes off and get comfortable. But he was telling him, pay some respect. He was reminding him to show some humility in the presence of something sacred. It's kind of like wearing muddy shoes in the house. What's mom say? You don't live in a pig's pen. Take off those muddy shoes. A few years ago, Zach was president of the FFA chapter at his school, and we had the opportunity to own and raise a goat. And he would go out to the barn, the FFA barn, and he'd work that goat and take care of the goat. And he always wore his work boots for that. And out of respect and appreciation, he would change his shoes before he walked into the house most of the time. See? He would change shoes. You know, I believe the Lord is speaking a familiar word to mothers and fathers today who have the joy and the responsibility of tending a home and caring for a family. He says to us, take off your shoes. The place where you're cooking, the place that you're cleaning, the place that you're raising the next generation is indeed holy ground, because you are mine, because your home is a part of my plan. So regardless of who you are, regardless of if you own your own business or you work for someone else, maybe you work in an office, maybe you work with your hands outdoors, perhaps you've chosen to be a stay-at-home mom, maybe you're married, maybe you're not, you might be single. Whether your house is a double-wide trailer in a desert or a mansion on a hillside, I believe this word is for you. Your home really is holy ground. It's a place where God's chosen to live and to do His work. Instead of sweeping His arm and creating a full society, God created a single family, a man and a woman. They became parents. He gave them a home, a special place to live. He gave them responsibility for populating the earth, for caring for them. Throughout the Old and the New Testaments, we find the idea that homes are places where souls are nourished and where God's ways are taught. Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting with verse 4, it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might, and these words, which I command thee this day, shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, when thou risest up, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates." What he's saying here is, take my words and interweave them throughout your whole family, throughout your whole house. Well, what is a home? Your house is everything. Well, it's actually many things that's just rolled up into one single place. A home can be an arcade, especially if you have children and they've got all the gaming systems. It can be a theater, a museum, an office, a classroom, a laundromat, a restaurant, a garden center or a workshop, a storage unit or hotel, or even a battleground. See, your home can be all these things in part. But you know, none of these things are really the essence of your home. The essence of a home is a place of shelter, safe and warm. It's a growing place, a teaching place, a seminary. Home is a hospitality center, a mission field. It's a base for traditions and memories, and it's a place to return to with joy. Home is a place where God lives. This home, your home, is holy ground. So take your shoes off. Make your house into a home. A home where your children, your family will return to with fondness, with joyful memories. So this morning, with these things in mind, I want to address three points: the father, the mother, and the children. First of all, the father. Fathers must be the leader of the family. Ephesians 5 tells us this. This is not a privilege. This is a responsibility. You've got to be the leader of the family. I tell you what, dads, that's a big job. It's a big job, and we need to step up and do it. And there's a whole lot of people out in the world that just don't have an idea of what that's about. It's not easy. There are a lot of difficult decisions that have to be made, financial, religious. And wives, don't fight your husband on this. Appreciate him for this. This is a job that they've got to do, and if you and your husband have the right type of relationship and that communication is there, a lot of the decisions that the dads make is going to be based right off of what you and him are talking about. So men, consult your wives. You don't have to make every decision on your own. You shouldn't. And also, fathers, be a spiritual leader in your home. Always lead being mindful of Christ and His teachings. Keep the commandments of God in your house. And if you do that, your children will see it. Number two, the father must love his wife. Ephesians 5 goes on to tell us about that. And this is an action, this love, this action verb here. It means the way you treat your wife. It's not your emotions towards her, but it's treating her with love. And then number three, the fathers need to provide. 1 Timothy 5 tells us that there's no greater failure than for a person that does not work, and that person is worse than an infidel. We must provide. We don't have to be the only providers, but we do have to provide. And we'll talk about all the different things that we provide, but we do need to work. And we need to teach our children to work. How many times have you looked around in society and you see that everything's just handed to the kids and they're not taught respect for it? They're not taught that you have to... Children today in schools believe that cell phones is a right, not a privilege. They believe that text messaging is a right. Guys, I'm sorry to say, but you can get a long ways without a cell phone. You don't have to have a text message and be texting all the time. In the book, If I Was Starting My Family Again by John Drescher, he lists a number of things that he'd do differently if he had the chance to perform the duties of fatherhood all over again. This is just a couple of them that I wrote down. But number one, he said, I would love the mother of my children more. Number two, I would listen more. Number three, I would seek more opportunities to give my child a sense of belonging. Number four, I would express words of appreciation and praise more often. Number five, I would spend more time together with the family. Number six, I would laugh more. I think that each one of those points are well taken. What the author explains about this first point here, he says that he wishes he did more of the little things for his wife, like opening doors for her, leaving little gifts on special occasions, writing love letters whenever he's away from home. You see, he states that he believes that if the children see these loving acts of kindness towards their mom, it gives them a greater sense of security. It adds stability in the lives of children. So fathers, do these things. On point number two, he explains that he would pay more attention when his child shares little hurts and complaints about matters that the child is interested in. What do? Most time when little children start talking, we tell them, be quiet. I don't want to hear that. I'm guilty. But it seems like every time Zane starts talking, he's wanting to talk about Star Wars. I don't want to hear about Star Wars all the time. But, you know, whenever he gets home from school and I ask him, how was your day? Oh, it was good. What'd you do today? He said, I had a good day. I didn't move my color at all. You know how they got the different colors for behavior? And then he goes on to tell me everyone that did have their colors moved. The author, he believes that the father who listens to his child when the child is small will more likely have a child who cares what the dad says later on in life. Moms are able to turn a house into a home, and you know what I mean, guys. They're absolutely able to take a house, dress it, make it beautiful, make it a warm place to be. Us guys just can't do that. We can put a bed where a bed's supposed to be. We can put a TV where a TV's supposed to be. If it ain't big enough, we might put a bigger TV where it's supposed to be. But a woman, she makes things into a home, doesn't she? The beauty of a home is not just the drapes and the curtains, the tablecloths. It's not just the fine china that you sit out at Christmas time. See, the beauty of a home is order. The blessing of a home is contentment. The glory of a home is hospitality. The crown of a home is godliness. Moms are able to do this, and that's just true. Too many times, though, here's the sad thing. Our culture is getting to where there's no planning for these things, and they just expect it to happen. Folks, if you just expect it to happen, it doesn't. There's got to be planning. Moms, you have to have your home with purpose. You have to have organization, and it takes time. If we want our homes warm and welcoming and to be successful at raising young children that turn out to be Christians, it's just like anything else that's important. It takes all of those things. Planning, purpose, takes time. We need to do it on purpose. Mothers, your life, your family is the product of a series of choices that you've made. They start with who you decide to get married to. Your choice of location to live, whether y'all decide to live in the great state of Texas or Lubbock or Dallas or wherever, your location is very important. The type of housing. You're going to be in a house, you're going to be in an apartment, you're going to rent, you're going to buy, you're going to build. You've got to decide on how big of a family you're going to have. You need to decide on how you're going to handle issues of money. Are you going to work? Some? Full-time? Part? Are you going to stay at home, be a stay-at-home mom? You see, every day you continue to make little and large choices. And they shape the atmosphere of your home. I'm not really talking about the temperature here. I'm talking about how it feels, but I'm not talking about whether it's 40 degrees, though. I think you know what I'm talking about. The atmosphere, it might be a cold feeling from people. Or it could be a warm conversation with mom. Mothers in your home, work toward having a peaceful atmosphere. You remember back in the Old Testament when King David was a young fella? His very best friend was Jonathan. Jonathan was King Saul's son. And they were very best friends. And in 1 Samuel 20, it tells us that they had an oath of friendship in the name of the Lord. Jonathan, he told David to go in peace. Now, at that time, his dad was trying to kill David. And he says, you go in peace. And he always had his back, always watched out for him. And Christian mothers, you've got a similar oath for your family. Make it a peaceful home, a home full of love and godly teachings. Throughout the New Testament, Jesus tells the disciples to go in peace. being peaceful, living in peace is referred to many, many times. Then we come to Acts chapter 9. And this tells us something unique about peace. See, this is the time when Saul is being converted. And after his conversion, he takes on the name Paul, and he preached and preached and preached. You remember all that. Well, he began preaching Jesus, and all of a sudden, they tried to kill him. They even had to take Saul in the night and lower him in a basket through an opening in a wall so that he might escape being killed. And the apostles, they ended up taking him to Caesarea and to Tarsus. But the scripture says in Acts 9 verse 30, Judea, Galilee, and Samaria enjoyed a time of peace. It was strengthened and encouraged by the Holy Spirit. It grew in numbers, living in the fear of the Lord. This is the time when Saul had been converted and the church had a time of peace and a time of growth. I tend to be a little bit on the hot-natured side. My wife is too. There's probably several of you that are a little bit hot-natured. And whenever we were getting ready to buy the home that we're in now, she had her ideas of what she wanted, and I had my ideas of what I wanted. But the one thing we agreed on is we wanted a swimming pool. I mean, when it gets around 100 degrees down there, and you just can't escape the heat, we want at least a swimming pool to jump into. That's one thing we agreed on. Well, during the summertime, my wife, she has a very close relationship with the thermostat in the house. And when the mercury starts creeping up and it settles in for one of those 100-plus days, my wife, she longs for the sound of that little click. She's waiting for that click because you know what happens. The AC starts working after the little click sound. The thermometer in your house, it's going to tell you what you already know. It's hot in here. But it's the thermostat that actually does something about it and gets the AC working or gets the heater working. How does your home feel? Is it warm with love or is it cold with frustrations? I would encourage you today, set your thermostat for peace. Make peace at home a priority. Practice trust and gratitude. Live with a thankful heart. Cultivate a quiet heart. Give yourself the peace that you need. Cultivate a gentle spirit. Learn to speak softly. Know your family. Cultivate a spirit of we and provide peaceful places for those that you love. So the question is, how do you set the emotional and spiritual thermostat in your home to peace? Remember, it's that thermostat that provides the action. And I'll tell you, it's by what you say. It's by how you say things. Basically, it's who you are on the inside. You let God dwell in your heart. You let Him touch every aspect of your life. Paul was speaking about some of these things to the Philippian brethren. He gives us a picture of how this can work in our homes as well. In Philippians chapter 4, starting with verse 4, it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always." And again, I say rejoice. "Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful or anxious for nothing. But in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made. Be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding,
shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do these things. Instead of stumbling through life and hoping that peace will someday find you, plan for it. Build that into your family. Use this as a guide. You know, sometimes when we're sitting down and we dump out a box of pieces to make a puzzle, we have a hard time putting those puzzle pieces together. But what do? We turn the box over and we look at the picture. Sometimes we need to have that example, don't we? Do that in your life. Use people that are close to you as examples. Use the scriptures as an example on how to build peace. Make peace a goal in your home. Proverbs 21, verse 9, it is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Moms, how do you envision your home? Do you visualize how you want your home to be like? I'm just going to say some words for a moment. You tell me if any of these words sound like your home. Friends, fun, hospitality, peace, time for what's important, stimulating conversation, shared meals, prayer and devotion, laughter, celebration, professional achievement, financial security, learning together, cherishing each other, pets, pleasant decor, comfort, warmth, children, Christ-centered, lonely, anger, alone, dull, selfish, cooking, cleaning, love, contentment. The truth is, if you want your home to be a peaceful place that you and your family can come to, then do it on purpose. What we do is we move beyond just the decorations of the home and we focus on creating a holy house for our families. So take off your shoes, because your home can be a gift of safety and comfort and freedom for you and your family. Take off your shoes. Then you might want to roll up your sleeves, because it's a lot of work. Children, listen to your parents. Listen to what your parents tell you. Being your mom or being your dad is not an easy thing. The Lord says that the children are to obey their parents. Parents, be parents. You're not buddies with your children. You're not their friend. They have friends at school to fill those shoes. I know that children want to grumble and argue and fight, but you know what? Deep down, what children are wanting, they're wanting to know where the boundaries are. They're wanting to know if mom and dad's really going to enforce those rules that they've given. Truth number one. Teens see you're taking charge as a form of love and security. That just sounds weird, doesn't it? It's not. That's really a truth. You taking charge gives them that sense of love and security. Back in 1994, I was teaching at North Mesquite High School. And Joe was a student of mine, and Joe said, "My mom doesn't love me." I said, "Well, what do you mean your mom doesn't? She takes care of you, doesn't she?" "Well, she lets me stay out all night long, and she doesn't even care if I come home. She doesn't love me." I called her on the phone, was talking with her about his performance at school, and I said, "You know, Mom, Joe doesn't think you love him." "What? I love my son." And I said, "Well, do you make him come home at night?" "No, I don't. I would never put rules and regulations on my son. I just love him too much." She refuses to do the one thing that he sees as love. And she refused to do it. Parents, don't try to show who's in charge, but instead we train the child how to be in charge of their own life. Truth number two, if you aren't in charge, your kids will lose respect for you and discount your authority. In 2002, I was teaching at Poteet High School, and I remember a boy named John. And he was mad that his dad was always on his case. John just couldn't do anything right because his dad was always on his case. But he was really glad he didn't have Larry's dad. See, Larry, his dad just simply didn't care what he did. He didn't make him do anything. Now, I don't want my dad hounding me all the time, but I'm glad that he's not like Larry's dad. Larry's dad didn't care if his boy went to school, didn't care about anything. Truth number three, even good kids need watchful attention and discipline. I'm talking about good kids. You think about the best kids you've got, the best kids that you know, best kids at church. They need watchful attention and they need discipline. I'm talking about the good ones, not the ones getting in trouble. 93% of the good ones, they admit to doing stupid things like lying and cheating. 93% of the good ones. Now, you take those good ones, 46% of them. Almost half of the good kids, and this is what they admit to. Yeah, they do a little drinking. Yeah, they smoke a little dope. Yeah, we'll go to a wild party once in a while. They'll sneak out of the house. They'll play around with intercourse. They don't mind stealing a little bit. And they admit to speeding by over 40 miles over the speed limit. Hey, if it's 60 miles an hour out there, we're talking about 100 miles an hour. These are the good kids. Parents are good kids. You're good kids. They need a watchful eye and they need discipline. Truth number four. Kids appreciate rules more when they understand the reason behind them. And that way, they don't feel like you're just making rules to be making rules. Just talk with them. Talk with them. I'm almost to the end of the sermon. I want to share a story with you real quick that I ran across. The story is about Charles Francis Adams. You probably don't remember who in the world he was. I didn't either. But he was the United States ambassador to Great Britain. And this is during President Lincoln's administration. And this story kills me. Okay? So Charles Francis Adams. We're talking about a big shot dude working for the government, right? He and his son both kept diaries. That sounds very Gurley, they kept journals, right? So they kept journals, and they both wrote entries regarding a day that they went fishing together. They spent a great part of the day fishing. Well, they had poor results, though. The fish just weren't biting. It was a warm summer day, and they sat there almost all day long without getting a bite. The son, he wrote about that day. He says, "Went fishing with my dad. The most glorious day of my life." Throughout the next 40 years of his life, he never forgot that special day that he had gone out fishing with his dad. Years later, when the father's journal was read, on that exact same date, referring to the exact same fishing trip, the father had a very different opinion. He said, "Went fishing with my son. Did not catch any fish. It was a day wasted." It was a day wasted. Two very different perspectives about the same event. One counted it a failure, while the other one saw it was a clear success. I guess it depends on what you was wanting to catch that day. It's very obvious what the father's concern was about. See, he didn't speak to any value about spending time with his boy. Now, whether this is a true story or just a fable, the point to me as a parent is very clear. Value the time with your family and with your children. Story number two. A mechanic had worked all day at the shop, and later in the evening at home, a friend saw him catching baseball with his son out in the yard. He was kind of surprised, and he called out, "Hey, Bill, aren't you tired after a long day's work?" Bill replied, "Yes, I am. Of course I'm tired." He goes, "Well, then why are you out there catching ball?" And the wise father answered immediately. He said, "I'd rather have a backache tonight than a heartache later on." You know what? Parenting is work. Children, don't make it extra work on your parents. Do your part. Work on your grades. Work on your behavior. Work on your attitude. Help keep peace in your home. When mom and dad says it's time to go to church, don't argue. Don't fight. Get ready and go to church with them. Be a part of the family, not part of the problem. To sum things up, our children, they need three main things. They need provisions. Fathers, mom and dads, we provide for our kids. Normally we consider this just material things, giving them clothes, giving them a place to live, but we also need to provide spiritual guidance. We're called to transfer heavenly values to our children. And it's so important to teach the importance of being a Christian and about his church. Number two, protection. There's a lot of evil things in this world. Protect them from it. Protection includes from harm's way, needless accidents, car accidents, motorcycle accidents, from drugs that are out there, from alcohol, spiritual dangers, and even the evils on the internet. Protect your kids. And prayer. We're given the biblical promise that the prayer of a righteous man avails much in James chapter 5. I encourage you to pray for your children as they grow up. Pray with them. It's so important for them to see the example of prayer in their parents. Be diligent, consistent in praying with your kids. Also found this poem. Tell you what, it opened your eyes. It says, "His little arms crept round my neck, and then I heard him say, four simple words I can't forget. Four words that made me pray. They turned a mirror on my soul. On secrets no one knew, they startled me. I hear them yet. He said, 'Daddy, I'll be like you. Daddy, I want to be just like you.'" Live your life where your kids can see the example, can see Christ in you. being a mother and being a father, take it seriously. Be the right example. Provide physically and spiritually for your family. Keep peace at home. Children, be a joy to your parents, not a burden. Those are the comments that I were prepared to share with you this morning. Again, I appreciate very, very much the opportunity to do that, to be with you. I'd encourage you to come back for the evening service. Tonight we're going to talk about plumbing. Recently we've had some plumbing problems at home, and I'll share a few thoughts that I've learned from that. The lesson is yours. If you're not a Christian, we encourage you to be one. Don't wait. The water is ready. Be baptized, having your sins washed away so that you can be a new Christian. Perhaps you are a Christian. You'd like the prayers of the congregation. The congregation is here to serve you, to pray with you. If we can help you in any way, would you please come as we stand and sing?